Have you ever wondered why you're not making a podcast? Maybe because you think it's too hard. Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. First of all, it's free, and there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will then distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. I mean, you're immediately in the podcast game. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So right now, download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Just go to anchor.fm and join me on Anchor.
Drifting into the night, this is Jim Perry. You are listening to Night Drift, presented by Euphemet.
Broadcasting from the heart of Cascadia and the edge of the world, welcome to Night Drift, presented by Euphemet. I'm Jim Perry. Thank you for listening to this bonus show. It's Thursday, July 16th, 2020. Tonight, non-dual shamanic healer Tim Rothschild is back, and we discuss the idea of sacred activism, as well as the phenomenon called Randonautica, in front of a live Patreon audience, right now, on Night Drift, presented by Euphemet. You know, you and I haven't had a proper conversation in the form of anything to do with Euphemet or your work as a non-dual Kabbalist healer. It's a shamanic practice, and it's one that you've talked about dedicating, you know, your week to this very edition of Euphemet Night Drift, but dedicating really your entire life now at this point to the study of shamanism and how you can better heal individuals with this sort of ancient practice through mystery school. Where the hell have you been for the last 2 years?
Am I good?
You're good.
I just needed to buy as much time as possible to answer that
nice
question, Jim.
I like that.
You got to check the messages. I was messaging you during your good introduction there saying, I used it as a cough button. It's one of my favorite things about Zoom is I can use the mute as a cough button, even if I'm doing healings with clients.
You use this for clients. That's what's going on here. You're crafty. I see what's happening.
It's just the, what is it, cross talents, you know, when you can take talents from one thing and bring it over to another.
Sure.
So the only thing I brought over from radio was the ability to hit the mute button mid-conversation with a client so that they don't know. Unfortunately, I can't do that on this show because then I stay muted for good.
Right. Yeah, you're done. All right. So I think I've answered this for you. You have been fucking around on Zoom for the last 2 years.
No.
So where have you been? What's been going on?
You know, there's so many different ways that I can answer that question. And I think over the course of tonight or maybe in future shows, we're probably going to spiral through it a couple times because as time goes on, I'm still understanding the nature of the illness that I went through. So I was sick, obviously, but it's turned into this whole other thing where it took me on, I want to say incredible journey. I'm going to hesitate to not make this so dramatic. I have a tendency to do that, to be really passionate about what I do. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but sometimes it misses the humanity and the ordinariness of what I went through. And I think that was a big part of my healing, you know? So I'll just put it this way. At the end of, I was sick for 5 years. And it started, for anybody that followed my journey, it started while I was still recording with Deep Inside the Rabbit Hole at Stand Up New York Labs. Started off with strange sinus infections and just not being able to sleep. And we made jokes out of it, you know, and I pushed through. I had a strong will, was able to still create things, Third Thing Network, other stuff. But over time, it started to wear on me, you know, and I started getting tests from all over, specialists, any specialist you can think of. I went to them over the years and nothing was coming up. And so it turned into a spiritual journey on its own, you know, without living with the mystery of the illness that I had, which expressed itself in a variety of ways, which ultimately culminated in, you know, insomnia for a few years. You know, try that. That's an interesting one. Lyme disease, which went undiagnosed for about 4 years before it climaxed when I moved into a place with toxic mold, which is like a perfect wedding for it. So it actually, you know, it turned into a good situation where, right as all my life streams were coming together, it was like this amazing thing. It's a theme in my life too. All of these wonderful things, which we'll talk about, were coming together. And then I just got slammed, you know, I couldn't push my body any longer. And I collapsed for about a year. And during that time, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about myself. I mean, over the course of the whole many years, I learned a lot about myself, a lot about life, a lot about the nature of illness. What is healing? You know, really, what is healing? What does it mean to heal spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally? So there's so much that I could talk about. But as I was preparing for the show, Jim, I was reading, and as you know, I'm going to be talking about a little bit about this, an excerpt from Andrew Harvey's talk, or is it a sort of a manifesto? It's called Sacred Activism. And as I was reading through it, I was blown away by the parallels of what he was talking about in his own personal experiences, but also looking out at the dark night of the soul that's going on globally right now. And so by dark night of the soul, I could say quite simply, we're met. We didn't ask for this. Well, maybe subconsciously we did in some way, and, you know, by our behaviors without realizing it, we asked for this. But we got smacked, you know, and we're meeting our limitations in a brand new way. And in doing this, what it's doing is it's causing the old structures that were created by our false self, you know, the self from a compassionate lens, the self that we needed to present to the world in order to be safe and happy, you know, the self that we abandoned over and over again throughout our childhood because we just couldn't bear certain traumas, you know, certain ridicules, well, you name it. Everybody's got their story of how they have these primary splits where they had to give themselves up at one point and become something else. Mm-hmm. You know, so you could look at the illness in the Western mind right now and shit, man, you know, this individuation type thing, which turned into individualism, which is now turned into this really mean model of I need to drive myself to exhaustion by myself, you know, and completely leaving my humanity behind, leaving who I am behind. So we've got all these exhausted, addicted people that feel unfulfilled and that are using this strange setup as a weapon to beat themselves up with because they can't keep up. And eventually, at some point, whether somebody's going to consciously move through this world because the universe is designed to heal. So either we're going to do this consciously or we're going to meet it unconsciously. Life is going to be kind enough, offer us a crisis that uproots us. And that's what I see going on. And I was in a very unique position over these last 4 or 5 years to go through that on my own. I could be so dramatic and give you these incredible tales of just how sick I was, the amount of trips to the hospital, who saved my life. You know, it was an incredible ride, man. I'm sure I'll write a book one day or something like that. But I could talk about where help came from, you know, don't get me wrong. While there were at times when the people around me thought I was dying and I couldn't breathe and that was it, right? It was like, we don't know what's going on. You've lost 60 pounds. You're done. And we're all scared to death at this point. Somehow, whether it was my ego protecting me, because sometimes that's what it does its job, or whether or not this was true, I believe it was true, Jim. I knew in my heart that this was, to, you know, put it a nice way, a rite of passage for me to become the healer that I want to be. But let's call it cause and effect. I lived my life really hard, really disconnected from who I actually was, as I described in the beginning. And so when I look at my 20s, I see a life of, I was a high level athlete. I partied nonstop 24 hours a day, 6-7 days a week. And I did that for like a decade. You know, it was a running joke between me and my friends about it, the miracle of the human body, because I kept waking up just by default, the fact that I woke up in the morning after what we were doing to ourselves. You know, so I was perfectly primed for this mysterious illness to kind of sneak in and have all of the typical, how do I put it? All of the regular touchstones, all of my strengths, all of the things that I came to rely on as a person, who I thought I was to be, everything came apart, Jim. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything, to the point where, you know, doctor said, you're no longer allowed to think for yourself anymore. You know, you now have to resign yourself to being a child, you know, so with that brain inflammation, things like that. So it's been a real trip, man. Limitations of Western science and a major part of my spiritual journey was this really long dark night of the soul. And I'm coming through it on the other side, having a pretty intimate understanding of what the world is going through in my own way.
And the timing is unbelievable, because as we're sitting here today and you're finding yourself again and you're finding health and you're finding the energy to even come and be a part of a podcast, mm-hmm. you are able to look back and see now perhaps the parallels between your journey of unconsciousness, sickness coming at you into what is happening today in the world. This unconscious reaction to these things that we're not addressing within ourselves or within our culture or within our society that yeah. bubbles up to a point where it's toxic, it's death, not requesting, it's not suggesting, it's demanding for implicit change. And so am I correct in that you're seeing parallels, you're feeling parallels between your own journey and what's happening today?
Absolutely. There's a resonance that I ride every day. I wake up and I feel it. If I want to let myself feel it for that day, I can literally feel, oh, there's a quality that's going out in the world right now that I've gone through. I have a relationship to that now. That's what allows me to say that I am a healer, right? Mm-hmm. To say that I'm a healer doesn't mean that I am healed in no sense. You know, Jim, we hang out. I am in no shape or form, you know, fully healed, omnipotent, omnipresent, any of that stuff. But what I am is healing. What I am is committed and I'm awakening. And I'm a pretty fucked up, imperfect human being, but I've been introduced, as you mentioned, in these mystery schools and these schools for healing and awakening, I've been introduced to a pretty genius schematic that uses the 10 dimensions represented with the Kabbalistic tree of life, the Kabbalistic universes, and then some other revolutionary aspects that Jason Shulman, the creator of the school, which is called A Society of Souls, what he created. You know, when I was introduced to that maybe 7 years ago, graduated in 2016. So I've been on a pretty fast track going through that school ever since. Now, the interesting piece, though, is even though I've had a tremendous amount of schooling required of me, you know, paperwork, show up to class, receive the transmissions, because this is all non-dual work. And you basically, I mean, really a major part of this work is to be around the kind of people who are blossoming, who every speed bump they encounter in their life becomes an opportunity for a particular kind of perfume to spread throughout the world. And to tell you that, here I'm going to be dramatic a little bit, but to tell you that you are loved, to tell you that you are loved, to say that you are unconditionally accepted.
That's not dramatic. I think people want to hear that, Tim. I mean,
man, I'm apprenticing in a class right now for Dubai, and I have it's such a privilege. It's not an understatement to say it's such a privilege to be with this woman, Summer, who, by the way, her name Summer stands for Gezellig. Which they don't have a word for that in English, but in the Dutch, it's the word that essentially, it's the feeling of when all of your family is in the living room and you just feel that wholeness, that coziness,
sure.
Right? Gezellig, that's the word in the Dutch. So that's the name, that's my teacher's vibration, right? And it's just, there's this sweetness to everything that she does. I watch her and I listen. She listens with her heart. She speaks through her heart. And that's the only place that somebody can live a non-dual life. You know, to hold the duality and the splits of the world, but to hold them in such a way that it's two sides of a greater thing. And that greater thing, it's always relationship, it's always love, it's always spaciousness.
Well, and having a concept of that feeling and resonating with it in that way, it can become a reminder, right, of a pathway, or at least something that should be shared, or that is at least a quality of importance to this whole journey. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's this guy, it's Isaac the Blind. And he said, by way of nourishment, not by way of knowledge. Jason actually used to put that on his brochures as the school first started out. And he took them off it. I'm sorry that he did, but I've clung on to that. Because what it does is it honors our deep capacity and intelligence for healing. And it says that the human design has every cell, every trillions, all the trillions of cells in our body, each one of them is a universe unto itself. And there is a natural organizing principle to this world. If we can get out of our personal only bullshit and awaken to this other impersonal stuff, like I like to say, the river swims the fish, you know, just for anybody who hasn't heard that, the fish's gills are actually designed to let the river swim them. And life swims humans in a similar way. And it's like, wow. You know, and then you start to hear those quotes, not my will, but the divine will, you know, not the small ego, but the big one, you know? And you start to have a different relationship to life that is doing and not doing at the same time. So relaxing and efforting at the same time. So we enter into the realm of paradox. And only the heart can hold paradox in that way. And yet here we are.
And what I find brilliant is this notion of sacred activism that you found, that you discovered, it speaks to that. It speaks to that quality of interaction with us. And to strip back and to step back for a second, this schematic that you've found yourself discovering of the shamanic process, it really boils down to sort of non-dual principles. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, our relationship to reality and or realities. And so I want to share with you, Tim, a article that has kept me up at night, and something that I've really wanted to just sort of get a shamanic perspective of, because it deals with the nature of reality. And so this is a recent article from The Insider, and it's a creepy new app for explorers led TikTokers to a dead body stuffed inside a suitcase. Here's how Randonautica works. It is essentially this app that engages with you by creating a string of random numbers that is a geolocation, and folks are using it to go and discover different adventure opportunities. And there is instinctly a sort of metaphysical aspect to this app, as in the instructions for its usage calls for the user to justify or to think of what their great intent for this adventure is before they even engage with it. And so what they're actually tapping into and what these numbers are generated from is quantum random number generation. And so, Tim, if that, you know, sounds familiar to you, that brings up the work with Princeton, right? And the Global Consciousness Project and the work of Dean Radin and Rupert Sheldrake. And for anyone that is sort of a student of this esoteric idea of accessing different realities, perhaps at the quantum level, or a tool that has essentially shown us that there is something else going on that we can scientifically prove to our relationship to reality is much more deeper, and that our consciousness, our group consciousness, these events that happen to us can affect these random number generators that are all over the world and are giving us data. So to take a step back, let me just read a little bit of this. A group of teenage friends were exploring Seattle when they made a horrifying discovery. Under a bridge, human remains packed into a suitcase. In a video uploaded on TikTok, the teens can be seen laughing as they use a stick to poke the suitcase, not knowing what's inside. Once they manage to open it, they discover a foul-smelling trash bag, prompting the teenagers to call the police. One of the teens can be heard saying, "It stinks, y'all. in the TikTok video, which has been viewed more than 4.3 million times. Again, it has a resonance with folks because of its lurid nature. The group's worst suspicions were later confirmed. Seattle police announced they were launching an investigation after verifying the suitcase did contain a dead body. The teens were led to the suitcase by a new Explorer app, and it's been around for a little bit, called Randonautica, which promises to turn the world around you into an adventure, according to its website. The app gives users, otherwise known as Randonauts, a randomly generated set of coordinates in their local area to explore. Before traveling there, however, users are encouraged to set an intention or a goal, with the theory that once they get to their destination, they will find something relevant to what they had thought. Completely esoteric. Mm-hmm. The randonauting trend has especially become popular way to during the coronavirus lockdown, with more than 1 million people downloading the app in the last few weeks, according to Bustle. So these are now individuals that are completely uninitiated in any sort of esoteric art or rationality behind their relationship to reality, now engaging with intention. And at that point in time, that becomes magic. Yes. Thousands of teens, including YouTube star Emma Chamberlain, have since been posting their randonauting experiences online, ranging from finding beautiful hidden spots in nature to stumbling upon creepy abandoned places. Now, where it gets even stranger is this app has now more than 1 million downloads just in the last few weeks, as more people have taken to explore their neighborhood. According to its official website, Randonautica is the world's first quantumly generated choose-your-own-adventure reality game. Randonauting was already a trend way before the app was launched in the beginning of 2020. It was popular amongst Reddit users who visited unusual places in their area and then discussing their experiences online. So, of course, this is a full-blown subculture of individuals now that are typically younger that really, I think, don't know what they're maybe playing with. I mean, I think the implications being that, and I'm not saying this is some deep, dark thing, and I'm not saying that this is bad even, but I am saying that there seems to me, and I'm sure you would agree, Tim, a power in this kind of relationship to our so-called reality tunnels. And a power between our intent manifesting into real things, good or bad. Now you have folks that have no training in this, are completely, you know what, Tim, we had a conversation about this. Okay. During our process of producing your documentary for you from that season one, we went to a magic shop in Brooklyn.
Yes.
And with this magic shop, I said, Tim, tell me what the difference is between this magic and what you're doing. And can you explain a little bit about that? The difference between pushing and pulling?
Yeah. So yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. When you work with this level of reality, you know, focused intention, anything quantum, you're going to have some sort of magical result, right? So how can these things communicate in the way that they communicate? What's actually going on that level? So we could talk about that separately. But when we're talking about what I do for a living, I'm a Kabbalistic healer. In the Kabbalah, we talk about receiving reality, receiving what's here. So for us, remembering something, you know, quite literally remembering something, is awakening to an already present, unfolded aspect of reality. Said another way, everything's already...
I was going to have you slow down and repeat that again in a different way.
So said another way, all of reality is already here. From one perspective, we're already whole. It's all right here. Everything you ever need, want, everything. Time is a cup, as we've said before in some of our shows together. And then you've got another perspective, this view from matter, this linear unfolding, which says as human beings, we are limited and imperfect, and we cannot know the wholeness of life. And yet here we are doing that. So sort of holding both of those together. Now, the reason I say that is because a part of my healing, what it does is it honors the already present whatever that's in front of a person when I'm doing healing, or as I'm doing healing, what I'm doing is I'm setting up conditions for myself or somebody else to awaken to this magic that's already here. It says it's already here. I don't need to do anything to it. I just need to be with it.
So instead of setting up a McDonald's in a prairie, you're there foraging and finding the food that's already existing.
So let me see. Yeah, maybe. What I'm doing is what I'm doing isn't presumptuous. What I'm doing is I'm not manipulating. I'm not controlling anything. I'm that river swimming in the fish and the fish swimming in the river. You know, not my will, but divine will. So it's about being in relationship with what's here and not recreating the world in the image of what I think it should be. So think about all the problems in the world right now coming from people who are rushing to solutions before they even have a relationship with what's going on. So with hammer consciousness, I will come back to your question, I promise. So if you're a hammer looking for nails all the time, we're always going to be recreating history. If we can, as human beings, slow things down enough to have a relationship to what's going on, which can be quite uncomfortable, but it's that relationship to the unknown and the known that allows something else to come forward in reality that couldn't unfold previously. This is one of the beautiful, magical things about human beings and what we're designed to do here, which is a part of why these non-initiated people can experience high magic by engaging with some things on the quantum level, with something as simple as focused intention, right? Because already, as soon as you commit to somebody commits to a healing with me 2 weeks from today, well, as far as I'm concerned, the entire universe is now working to support their healing and awakening. So that starts on a quantum level. But it takes time to notice how these things kind of play out. So to go back to the other way, magic with a K is a way to control, to manipulate, to kind of impose your will out onto the world. Nothing wrong with that, you know, but you can see how in the unawakened or the uninitiated, you know, if you're creating magic because you believe what you're doing is right, I wonder, you know, how do you know if doing this is right? How do you know if doing this is actually healing or if you're just doing magic? Are you creating more obstacles for the world or are you being with it as it is and letting the mystery reveal itself? Hmm. Is this making sense a little bit?
Oh, very much so.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So you could see why, you know, sort of my impression of what's happening with this app as a manifested cultural aberration in some way, playing with the fabric of what our relationship to reality is. What is your impression of how this may unfold or what we can learn from an app like this?
Well, I'm thinking about Schrodinger's cat. You know, I'm thinking about Lynn McTaggart and her work with the field, you know, which is all in the same kind of stuff that you're talking about before. You named all the big hitters there, Rupert Sheldrake, morphic fields and that sort of stuff. You know, it's sexy. This is a sexy thing. I want to believe. I want to know, you know, that's a thing with these sorts of, you know, and yet I don't need to believe. I know there's something going on, but what it is, I'm not so sure. You know, I wish I could give you an answer, but it's more like something like this, you kind of have to go along for the ride, in my opinion, you know, because we only know how much we know. And then if we can allow ourselves to not know, but allow that not knowing to sort of call out to us. A little bit. If we're listening, that's enough.
Right.
So you have the focused intention to listen and then you see what shows up. Anyway, that's how I would do it.
It begs the question how much the developers know of what's going on. I would love to talk to one of them. I think one of our next strange attractors or interviews, which I don't know if I made it clear on Patreon or not, but Tim and I are going to do these routinely just as a normal thing between him and I, and have you folks invited as a part of that. So I think one of the next ones we do, maybe we bring someone from Randonautica onto the program and sort of see how much intention they are putting towards it themselves.
Yeah. Well, imagine what would happen. It's one thing if it's one person putting intention, but if it's two or more, and if you start to get around 9 or 13, what you have then is a morphic field, a focused intention that is exponentially more powerful than anything else. That's the whole big secret behind going to a yoga class or a whole big secret behind going to these mystery schools is we show up and we just bathe in each other's awakenings.
Sure.
and the perfume just gets passed around, and one person's heart breaks and it breaks for the world, and one person wakes up and it wakes up for the world. And so the more that we are together in this certain sense, and this kind of gets into the sacred activism stuff, anytime you want to make any kind of transformation in the world or have some fun game, reveal, you know, your focused intention with an app like this, the more the better. The more the better, because then the human consciousness can start to direct more of the quantum mechanics. I wish I could say it differently, but I'm more of a mystic, so I can't break down the science. I can point to science. I can't break it down, but I live it. And I can tell you, yeah, this is true. You know my career. It started off as being the explorer, and then at one point I realized, oh, I have to join the mystery school. And that's the only way I'm going to know for sure.
Yeah, powerful, and from there, tool. Powerful tool. And maybe you'll see a rise in folks that are going to find a mystery school based on this interaction with reality, or this idea that something could be much more wonderful than what we know as our consensus reality. Mm-hmm. That'll be interesting. So if any of you folks listening have had an experience as a randonaut, anything strange or an opinion, go ahead and raise your hand if you'd like to chime in. And then I think, Tim, let's go back to this idea of sacred activism as well and talk about, you know, you shared this great piece with me, and there were points in it that just, you know, sort of had me shaking with excitement. Mm-hmm. Because it was one of the first times, honestly, as a friend, that I felt that energy from you again. Mm. That intent of putting something out in the world by sharing something like this. Because you and I had a lot of really deep conversations about, okay, in addition to being an ally and an advocate and an activist here within 3D space, right, if you will, what's the broader picture in terms of a metaphysical or shamanic notion behind how we can treat ourselves through this and how we can treat others, that's beyond boots on the ground, that's beyond smashing a window? How can we look at this in a way that is focused on sort of loving intention, right? Mm. Because so much feels so based, and we're challenged and we're insecure. And I think more often than not, especially folks that I think are within our community are grappling with what they can do and say in this great time of turmoil, mm-hmm. which is really just a reflection of turmoil over, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years that is bubbling over, or millennia, if you want to go that far. But there's pieces of this that were so interesting to me because they point to this idea of what is becoming a divine being.
Mm. Yeah.
How being a human in this, you know, there's a quote in here. You'll not find yourself sitting in ecstasy on the top of a mountain, gazing down at human affairs with serene indifference. You will find yourself in the middle of a marketplace, loving all beings, wanting liberation for all beings, aware that they are suffering terribly. This vision in separation. And isn't that what we're talking about?
Yeah, it's the bodhisattva.
Separation?
Yeah. You know, non-duality includes the separation and goes beyond it. It heals the separation. So when we talk about sacred activism, we're talking about a non-dual approach to activism. You know, how do you create on the deepest level? I don't think he uses this language, but how do you create the vibration where the cops don't create the hippies and the hippies don't create the cops? And it's the same exact thing. It's just two opposites in conflict, in opposition with one another. You know, so I think of that Rumi poem where he says, you know, meet me in the field beyond right or wrong. Mm. You know, I'll meet you there. He's talking about relationship. He's talking about coming into relationship with what's right here. And so a lot of people have talked about how, you know, righteousness is one of the last gates before heaven. You know, think of heaven as a state of consciousness. A lot of activists out there are pretty damn righteous, and for good reason, right? I mean, it's righteous righteousness. It has a place. It's burning passion to change the structures of the world that are distributing power and exercising power in really toxic and horrible ways, you know, for all beings on this planet, all beings, not just humans. So what do we do about that, right? How can, you know, can we even let ourselves sink into the pain of that? Well, you know, Andrew Harvey talks about how to get to that place by going through the dark night of the soul, by allowing yourself to experience that pain and that heartbreak in such a way that it doesn't go, let's see what he says. So it's not meaningless. It's connective tissue. We're all suffering. We're all in pain. It's not equal, obviously. Everyone has their own version and their own story. But what he's talking about is, well, he says in his own dark night of the soul moment, when, like I said, for myself, everything that he thought he was, his false self, was taken away. You know, anybody can look up dark night of the soul and find a ton of material out there. So I don't need to go into it, but it is one of the hardest things anyone ever has to go through. And let me tell you, suicide is on the table every day when you're going through that. So get help, get support, get healings. It's darkest before the dawn. You know, you have to meet these big problems, get vivid in your life before you can have a relationship to them and change. So for some of us who are pretty fucked up, myself included, sometimes it needs to get really, really bad and really in your face before you can start to actually make those changes. So here are my cats joining me here. Let me get them one little view here. Lohanama. So basically what he said was the dark night of the soul, and I agree with him. I'm just using his language because it's better than mine right now. Is that he said, it turned me from a mystic obsessed with the inner world, because that's what mystics do, right? And you can't deny it. You know, I've lost a lot of friends on this healing journey, transforming so fast sometimes that people can't keep up. And I split the world when I was trying to heal it, you know, driving myself in certain ways. The point is, it turned me from a mystic obsessed with the inner world into someone actively involved in changing the structures of society and the ways in which power is distributed. I'm going to repeat that sentence, except I won't. What he did was he allowed his narcissism to burn away, including the subtle narcissism of the conventional mystical path, so that all of us can be transformed in our own unique ways and into what he calls sacred activists. So from the mystic obsessed with the inner world to someone involved in changing the structures of society, in a prolonged and frightening way, the corruption of one accepted system of power, that of the guru system, its advocates, it made him far more sensitive than he had ever been to the ruthless effect of power in general. Basically, he goes on and on about how in coming into relationship with his own pain and his own power, he then saw that spread out the rest of the world, and he had a unifying experience. And he started to see that you couldn't separate the politics, the religion, you couldn't separate anything anymore, because it had everything to do with the human being that was in relationship to it. You know, so I think about euphemism, the paranormal and our relationship to it. It's so important. There's no separation. And to think that we can talk about one thing as if it's not connected to something else is not a service. It's not a service. We can do that sometimes to highlight certain things, talk about this thing only, you know, this thing in a vacuum. But then we always have to come back to its relationship to something. And that already starts to make the shape of it a little bit more amorphous, alive, changing, perhaps frozen and injured. You know, but it tells you something else about what this is and how it's creating and how it's being created by whatever else it's in relationship to. Is it making sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And so often there is seemingly forces that have something to gain for keeping things separate, keeping something over here. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're saying is that context is standing in the middle somewhere and looking around and then walking over here and walking over there and holding hands with those relationships, because it's all included. It's all a part of it. It's not a non-binary situation.
Right.
And I think what leads, you know, sort of what resonates with me about this as a storyteller is that context is important in telling stories. And context is king in terms of discussing relationships with things that either are known or unknown. And it is never a matter of belief or non-belief. There's something in the middle. maybe you'd call this space, this liminal space, the third thing, perhaps, that these two forces meet and create something different. They create something new. And there is an opportunity for discovery.
Yes. So to go back to what you're saying, so wherever you go, when you take that step left or right, you're in the center of the universe. You're in relationship to everything, to the best of your ability. And to know that gives you a unique perspective to be with what's right here and say, what's right here appearing in front of me right now is the most valuable thing ever, because it's right here and I can't ignore it. We reject nothing. So one of the things he goes into in the sacred activism is a part of this dark night of the soul. What it does is it awakens us to the sacredness of all life, all living beings. And let me tell you, everything's alive in its own way. Rock consciousness is a thing. We can learn from it. You know, so when we start to open ourselves up to that level of sacredness, that, as we'd say in our school, form preciousness, because Jim, we'll never have another conversation like this in all of the dimensions and all of space and time ever, forever. This will never happen like this again. And if I just take a moment to honor that truth, that's a blessing. And that'll ripple out to everyone who hears this. You know, that's that perfume I'm talking about. It's just acknowledging the fact that this is sacred here. This is God too. This is wholeness. This is life. This is reality as it is. So when that happens, a commitment needs to be made. I mean, think about how much denial the world is in. I'll use myself as an example. How I've driven my body, even when I was sick, to heal others, yet I was killing myself, right? The wounded warrior. I was in denial of something like that for many, many years. That was a part of my dark night, was to somehow have a shattering where it's like the structure of how I held myself. How the hell am I going to be kind to myself and still keep up this spectacular performance that I need in order for people to love me?
Right.
So like that was one example, you know? And by doing that, I now have compassion for all the other people in the world that have a similar issue and they're in similar form of denial. And I started to recognize, oh, denial has a really awesome, important place in our lives because we simply cannot take in all of reality at once. Trust me, I tried. Took a lot of healing to recover from that. You hear people having ayahuasca and all that, not against it, but people who move too fast. Mm. They get that spiritual scarring. So
Interesting.
Yeah.
Would you be of the opinion that perhaps, you know, maybe this is controversial, but those exploring the medicines, right? Coming from a straight edger, this is all very fascinating to me on a peripheral level. Mm-hmm. Our relationship to consciousness that can be granted and the insight essentially that seems to come from these rituals. These medicines, these adventures into ourselves and then touching some other place. But would you say that folks that more often than not go into those scenarios unprepared to deal with the ramifications of what these very powerful ritualistic practices can teach us, are they missing something and are they not ready for it?
Well, you know, it's a case by case basis, you know, so everything has a place, you know, so, you know, when I look at the medicines, they were talking about ayahuasca, psilocybin, wachuma, you know, you name it. You know, they're all out there. They're used in shamanistic practices. And now, thank God, you know, things like MDMA and psilocybin, they're being studied as a more therapeutic way in the West. You know, so all these things have their place. It comes down to relationship. Who am I now? What are my needs? When does the medicine become the poison? Is this poison from the start? You know, how's my karmic constitution? Can I tolerate this kind of thing? You know, I can't tell you how many people after Burning Man, gyms get the post New Year's resolution rush. You know, I get the post Burning Man rush. Mm. Everyone's coming to me because they took too big a bite of reality. Mm. So kindness has such an important place, kindness, rhythm with who we are. And the West has totally lost connection to that. We've totally split who we are and what we're doing are never in the same place. In order to bear that lack of unfulfillment, we come at it with the same consciousness. All right, I'm going to fucking dig in and blow my consciousness to pieces and find that golden nugget. Well, you're going to blow your consciousness to pieces, and then the golden nugget is hopefully going to find a healer that can help you with kindness and teach you a better way. So I'm not knocking the medicines, but it has to be in relationship. It has to be in relationship. And from the shamans that I know, a lot of these medicines are a last resort. Hmm. And a lot of people are treating them not like
not
a last
the first
resort.
Step.
Not the first step. Step. First step is take a look at your suffering. The first step is stand still for a moment. Try that. Try standing still. See what shows up. See how much sensations rush through your body. See how quickly you save yourself from being present. See how quickly. And then you'll start to see maybe it's not the right time to imbibe in something that's going to bring so much more to the surface when I can barely stand the air I'm breathing. And I really do mean that. So my work has moved more into this kindness piece, the rhythm. It's more like a gym. It's become like music. Mm-hmm. Every time I meet with someone, there's a new note to play and there's a new way to work with it. And it's kind and it's gentle and it works. And those medicines are still, I still have plenty of friends that are involved in it. But for me personally, it would move me too quickly. And I'd have to do too much damage, too much repair on the back end.
We'll be right back with Tim Rothschild and Patron Calls here on Night Drift. Presented by Euphemet.
Follow Euphemet on Spotify and subscribe on iTunes to receive new episodes of Night Drift automatically and gain access to all of our past episodes. This is Jim Perry. You are listening to Night Drift, presented by Euphemet.
Drifting further into the night, we are back here with non-dual shamanic healer, Tim Rothschild, and a live Patreon audience. Real quick, if you want to hear more about Tim's story, he is featured in a few documentaries on this very feed. Look up episode 004, The Healer, 018, The Desert and the Divine, and Obscura 004, The Mystery School. Also, patrons have access to classic Tim interviews from the original series. You can find more at euphemet.com. Coming up on Night Drift, my production team from Euphemet Season 1, Chelsea Weber-Smith and Tyler Carey join us to relive behind-the-scenes moments and how making the show has affected them. Chelsea, of course, is the host and creator of the critically acclaimed podcast series American Hysteria, which we dive deep into. That's next. Also, coming up, stand-up and host creator of the always intriguing Me and Paranormal You, a great friend, Ryan Singer, on his recent harrowing adventures out in the field as an investigator. How has the search for the unknown changed him recently? It may not be the way you expect. And in the next coming weeks, we'll have siblings Kristen Anderson and Will Rogers on. They host this great show called Guide to the Unknown. It's a weekly podcast about horror, spooky pop culture, urban legends, and the paranormal, and they have an ability to keep it cozy and light. Favorite episodes include a tour of the unique Disney haunted mansions around the world, the account of a seance they attended in a paranormal bookstore, and the real-life story behind The Conjuring. New episodes come out every Friday on all major podcast apps, including Spotify. The episodes are recorded live every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern on youtube.com/talkbomb. And if you miss it, the video is released on Friday alongside the podcast. So please check out their show before they come on, go to gttupod.com for all the links to enjoy the show, and follow at gttupod everywhere on social media. And have you had an experience with Randonautica or maybe shamanic practice? How about ghosts or UFOs? Do you feel like your life has been changed by the unknown? Do you have a story you think would make a great UFOmet feature documentary? If you do, please get in touch at jim@ufomet.com. All right, we'll dive back in with mystic Tim Rothschild next on Night Drift, presented by UFOmet. You know what's so interesting about this conversation, and I think those who have listened to our past conversations might agree, is that in the past, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years of having these conversations with you,
right,
we so often in the past got lost in theory and concept. And I think what's revealing itself now, it's more relevant. It's more prescient in terms of what our relationship to reality currently is at this moment in time. And it's very humanistic. Mm-hmm. So I think, Tim, I'm seeing that evolve in your work. I'm seeing that evolve in you as a person, your relationship to internalizing, to, you know, some mystics would say, you know, sort of integrating this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I feel it's becoming a part of your, like, your tissue. Mm-hmm. And your vocal cords and your mouth and tongue, and you're able to actually communicate the implications of these processes or these ideas in a real way. And so I appreciate that, man.
Thank you for saying so.
You were gone for a while, but you're back.
It's so good to be back, Jim. Thank you.
Good to have you back. So with all that being said, I think that in the past, I wouldn't have asked you such a pointed question in terms of what relationship to this nature reality and shamanic practice and non-dualism. I wouldn't ask you to essentially maybe give advice to those right now that are listening to this, either live with us in the room or those listening on the podcast feed. If they're feeling stuck in this toxic environment, either outside of our windows or in, either outside of our eyeballs or within them, within ourselves, what would you say they should first do?
It's a good question. You know, have you heard of biomimicry?
Yep.
Study of how nature solves life's problems, you know? So if some of my clients are here, some of the people I teach are listening, they've heard this before, but it bears repeating. You know, my work has to do with being in relationship to the way life is, the way reality is, not the way I want it to be, not the way I think it is. You know, it's just meeting it as it is, which is constantly a surprise. So I say that because what we can start to do is start to look at what nature is doing to solve life's problems. And we can start to let that inform us a little bit, right? So just take stuckness for an example. Water, its nature is to flow, is to gather, is to splash on rocks, is to pool. You get the point, right? Now, say beavers chop down some trees, create a dam, and now this water gets stuck, right? So what happens? Water gets stuck. What does it start to do? Well, like I said before, it starts to gather and it starts to pool. And maybe some twigs start to fall in there, some leaves start to gather, maybe some insects, maybe a frog or two, bird shows up.
You know, log falls over. Let's keep
all this. Yeah, before you know it, an ecosystem is created.
Sure.
So in other words, when nature is stuck, it creates relationships. And those relationships created something that was larger than the sum of its parts. And because water doesn't have neuroses, even though it has memory, it's not obsessed with its memory. Water, when it's stuck, just does what it's supposed to do. It gets unstuck. Human beings, we get stuck and we go, I'm the worst in the world, or I'm not supposed to be stuck, not realizing that that's stuck, or maybe I need to take a stronger dose of ayahuasca and blow through this stuckness, you know? Again, I have nothing against ayahuasca, but it's here, so whatever. So it's about coming into relationship with what's here. Why are you stuck? It's about asking good questions. It's not about jumping to some judgment, right? First there was mercy, then there was judgment. So be curious first. Be curious first. Ask questions. Ask good questions. Like, what's going on in the world right now? What is fierce love? You know, you're feeling stuck with everything that's going on. How can I manifest love right here, right now? Does it look like driving yourself through this stuckness, or does it look like being with stuckness in a new way? Have you ever even created the space to say, can I be with this limitation in a new way? Perhaps this limitation is exactly what I need. You know, Jason would say, maybe there's honey in that rock. And we're so busy solving the world's problems over and over and over again that we haven't yet realized that that these problems haven't even revealed their heart to us, and we have no relationship. So there can be no healing. There's just more and more chaos and more people telling us how the world should be and what we should do. It's like, no, can we tolerate the unknown and the mystery of this? Can we bear some space and say, I'm stuck and that's okay, even though I hate it? I prefer to be moving. You know, I prefer to be drunk when I'm stuck. No, can you bear it? And let some new relationship be born that couldn't be born before, and let humanity as a whole keep on going. Because that's kind of what we're getting up to at this point now. So what this guy mentions in sacred activism, but it's what I've been talking about for years. The mystics, they say, give or take 50 years, we're going to have the Sri Yantra, the balancing of the masculine and the feminine, light and dark. Our relationship to death is changing. We have to be grieving life now. We have to be grieving it. You know, have you ever done that, Jim? I just started... Sorry, can I keep going? I have a couple more hours, right?
Please do. Talk a little bit about grieving life and what that really means. But also, I think that could be a good topic for the next one of these.
Sure. Well, just I'll give an example. You know, I've done all this spiritual work. I talk about saving myself. I just started getting to the point just the other day. I was in finishing up year two of teacher training, and I felt this overwhelming, it wasn't too overwhelming. It was just enough for me to lose myself and come back into consciousness and notice, oh my God, there's a feeling that I'm experiencing that I've tried to save myself from my entire life. This is true. In this moment, this is where I am in my healing work. I'm not through it, so I know enough not to talk about it any more than this, but I know that I'm building the spiritual and physical muscle at this moment to change my relationship to all of reality in a sense where I'm no longer using it to save me from my discomforts, but instead I'm meeting in a real way. Do you get that?
Yeah.
What, you know what I realized? I was using Art Bell for so many years to fill this hole. I was using video games. I have multiple screens on when I was doing that sort of thing. When I was using sex, drugs, and rock and roll. When I was throwing parties at my house. Everything I was doing was saving myself. And it wasn't real. And I had to meet that, and I had to grieve that. You know, and so as I built the muscle to be able to start to be with this emptiness, which probably started when I was like 3 years old or some shit. But I started to have I have two cats. I love my cats. And I promise I'll wrap it up after this. But I started to look at them, and I started to be able to take them in a different way. And I realized that in order to take in how much I love them, I'm probably going to cry as I say this, I also had to take in the fact that they're not going to be here forever. And I didn't realize how much I was protecting myself from that while simultaneously limiting how much beauty and preciousness there could be in this moment. Right? Huge, huge, huge. So I started to feel the responsibility then of not using radio as an ego trip to say all these wonderful, spectacular things so that my audience can adore me and save me from my childhood pain. It's not about that anymore. So I felt an additional kind of responsibility showing up today, and at the same time knowing that it's probably always going to be some sort of ego trip, saving me just a little bit, and life is kind in that way. So that's what I mean by grieving life as it is. It's something, I don't even know if anyone's ever talked about that. It came to me today as I was thinking about this. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of how you have to do it. That's how we're going to merge that primary split of trying to avoid life and death and realize that these are a package deal, and it's happening every moment. And so all of these opposites, that's what sacred activism is about. All of these opposites, cops and robbers, rioters, and you know the lovely police officer, you want to name it. How can we meet this in a way that the vibration is not confrontational and conflicting and creating more of the same problem, but instead heals the narcissism of both sides, of all sides, and creates space for something else to show up that we'll all be surprised by. We'll all say it's magical, and it'll be some expression of love. Mm. I promise. That's it.
Yeah.
So.
It's beautiful, man. Thanks for sharing that. And yeah, I feel there is a grieving process going on. You know, I think everyone's life has changed this year. And I think that as it continues to change, there's a continual grieving going on. And there's stages of grief, correct? We're in the midst of all sorts of stages of grief of folks, you know, battling within this. I think you said, you called it a viral winter. And I stole this from you, and I used it on many things. So thanks for that.
It's good.
Tim, I love you, man. It was a great conversation. I think right now I'll go ahead and just open the room up for anyone that wants to chat. Also joining from Euphemet crew land, Kyle Gilmer is my brother. He was the live producer for Euphemet, the original series. And so having him with Tim and I here is really a pretty special thing. All those late nights on Deep Talk Radio Network, testing our limits with doing a live call-in radio show was really a special time. And so it's cool that Kyle joined us here tonight. And then Haley has joined us as well.
Hi.
Haley's been helping me with some social media content. Tim, you've probably got an email from Haley that you haven't never responded to.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that.
Please do that.
But
the video I made for you is cool regardless.
Yeah, so she's been cutting those awesome videos for the Instagram page that are sort of, we settled on the name of projections for them because really they're sort of kind of this avant-garde take on sort of the past and present and the guest and what the content is speaking to. So thanks, Haley, for working on those, and appreciate you joining us here tonight. Kyle, can you say something? I'll unmute you here. I want to hear your voice. Please. See, again, this is like a great flashback.
This is perfect. The original series.
When Kyle is present, but then he's gone. And that's classic. Thank you, folks. I think I have everything I need from you, Tim. You did great, man. Like, that was so classic. And
Thanks,
I'm so glad you're back in my life in this way. You know what I mean? It's been great, of course, that we have a friendship outside of this work and that we're constantly in contact. But to have you back as a collaborator with this stuff is just so awesome. And for you to be welcomed back into what we're, you know, sort of creating here on Patreon is so fun and so enlightening in a lot of senses. So appreciate that.
I agree, man. This is special. I won't forget this.
Yeah. No, you shouldn't. Don't ever forget it. Don't ever forget what I've done for you. Right. Okay.
So what's up? No questions? That's it? We're done?
I came in at the very last moment because I just got this email, but that was a great last paragraph.
Get out of here.
You didn't respond to my email.
I saw it, though.
I can do whatever I want. That doesn't mean anything.
I think about it every day.
Yeah.
A little bit anxiety every day.
Yeah, I sent him an email this morning with the Zoom link, and he had me email it back to him 10 minutes before because he, it's classic.
Gone.
You mystics, you shamanistic healers.
Well, you know, I was thinking this one thing. What about I'm calling it the quantum app. What's the name of it right now?
Randonautica.
It's called a Randonautica.
Randonautica.
I just did it earlier today.
Oh, really? So the show, like we were talking all about that, about in particular, the folks in Seattle
that founded.
Yeah.
So you
did it for the first time.
Definitely a weird app for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't find anything of value, really. I mean, I just wanted to find one that was close to me, just to try it out first, because I feel like if I was going to do it on my own, like knowing the things that have happened to some people and just like being a girl in Brooklyn, like in New York, don't want to go like too far on my own, mm-hmm. just walking, you know?
Yeah.
Which is like feel like I just didn't really feel safe. So I just kind of wanted to like do it in baby steps kind of. So I just went to one that was near my house that was apparently a void, right? So there's okay. like the there's attractors and there's voids. So, and you can choose anomaly, and the anomaly is like the biggest out of the two. And so it sent me to a void, and I was disappointed, but right. I didn't really expect much.
Did mm-hmm. you set your intention as the app like suggests to do?
I did. I'm like embarrassed to say what it was.
You gotta say it.
I mean, I've heard, like, I besides just the people finding the bodies, I was also hearing like stories and watching videos of this group that set their intentions to like, they just said blue and white, and then it took them to this blue and white house, and there was a blue car driving in front of them, and the license plate said intent. Mm-hmm. And there was like a video of it. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I don't know. I think like obviously videos can be misleading, but. Yeah.
But the amount of them is pretty stunning. I mean, talk about a YouTube rabbit hole, and
yeah.
Essentially in TikTok, you can continue just like going through them endlessly as, mm-hmm. as sort of the, Amy, you said you used it as well.
What was
your experience?
I actually tried it with my friend, downloaded it a few weeks ago. I don't know if she found it. She probably found it because of the very famous TikTok video, but, we're both a type of people who kind of already experience synchronicities all the time. And like, we're just those kinds of people. And usually when we are together, we tend to have more, I guess, significant experiences. So we decided to try this app together. And the very first one, I think it specifically says on the app to do things safely. You know, don't trespass, don't, you know, avoid doing things that, you know, middle of the night kind of stuff, like don't do anything that can put you in harm's way. And I think we had started using the app, it was probably about 8 p.m. in Missouri. So it's still pretty light out, but getting dark. And I think we both had set our intentions to be something like, because we were nervous about it, seeing how it had taken some people to some dangerous situations or, you know, kind of scary, like finding a dead body. So we were thinking like, okay, we just, you know, we're excited about it, but we want to stay safe. That was kind of our sort of feelings between the two of us. And it took us to a spot pretty close to where we were parked into a neighborhood that I've passed by many times, but I never go into. And it took us into a cul-de-sac where there were a bunch of Black Lives Matter signs and stuff. So my thought, being a non-white person, was like, okay, cool. Like, I feel kind of comfortable in this area, like just because if anything happens, there are people who aren't necessarily out to harm me. But we ended up in this cul-de-sac where there was just nothing. It was just like the sort of empty space and there between two houses. And when we drove up to it, by the time we drove up to it, it was kind of dark, and her headlights hit this sign that was in front of the space, and there's just a big sign that says danger. And I kind of looked at it like, this is super weird. And I couldn't remember why it felt weird. And I thought, this is odd. And so we're turning around, and as we're turning around, I'm just like, wait a minute, didn't we just make this very big sort of commotion about, okay, we need to stay safe, we don't want to put ourselves in harm's way? And it's like, this feels like, okay, yeah, we'll turn around, no problem. Like, we just kind of booked it out of the neighborhood and just thought, all right, that was really strange. And we've had it a few more times. It doesn't always necessarily send you to any place that necessarily, it's not like something that's necessarily in your face. But I think that with our experiences using it, it's almost more like to kind of break you out of your routine. Like, it has always taken us into a place we have never seen before. And we live in a pretty small town. Like, it's not super small, but it's small enough that we've driven all over town before. And it has just taken us into the places we didn't even know existed. And really beautiful places. And, you know, even some, like one of the times we did it, we set our intention to, we just want to have an adventure. And it literally took us like down this trail to this adventure park. And it was labeled that. It just, big sign that says, and we didn't even see that.
Right there.
Yeah. And we didn't see that sign until we had walked down the trail and then kind of was like, what is this? And then there was just a big sign, and it's on our university campus, or it's considered part of the campus, but we'd never seen it. And we just turn around and there's this big sign says adventure park. And I'm like, okay. I mean, it doesn't always flash a big sign like that, but I mean, I think it's mostly just to kind of to break you out of like the routine that you set for your life.
Yeah.
And I think that for us, it has worked really well that way. So we've kind of been using it like if we just want to do something different and see something different and
right.
kind of think outside of the normal things we're thinking about. It's worked pretty well for that.
Yeah. But thanks for sharing that. So I have a lot of thoughts about what you said. Firstly, you know, if folks are going into this with the idea, with the backstory that, oh my God, people find dead bodies and weird shit with this. You know, if they're going into that sort of preloaded with those ideas and notions, does that become more of a self-fulfilling prophecy in that way, right? Or can it at least? I'll tell you this, I've used it just once, and I was with the folks from Liminal Earth. And if you guys are familiar with these guys, they have this incredible interactive map online where they're creating a map of the weird. So they're very into this idea of sort of paranormal cartography. So I drove around with them one afternoon using this app. I had never heard of it before. And it simply took us to sort of this more well-to-do part of town, to the footsteps of a giant mini mansion. And the specific geographic locations provided was what would essentially be potentially like a room in the attic or something. And so even though that was such a mundane experience, filled with really nothing, I will tell you this, as someone who has been in at least some of the most haunted locations in the United States of America, the feeling I had standing outside of that house is comparable to being in the most haunted rooms in North America, because there is a feeling of anticipation that I think subconsciously comes into your mind that, oh, what are the possibilities? What is really in that room? What is up there? And, you know, I think it's an interesting way for people to address the conflict between ourselves and our inability to understand the unexplained. You know, we're constantly up against that veil that we can't see beyond. And this app is essentially displaying that in a way that, just like ghost hunters or legend trippers or folklore mappers or even some aspiring mystics, you know, they'll find themselves in these states so they can be, and I'm talking about cardboard saints, all right, Tim, so don't get too crazy. They find themselves in these situations where they want to be titillated and they want to find excitement and they want to find some sort of understanding of what could happen. They want an experience. They want to see a ghost. And so often we don't, but we're left with that feeling that there's something really important about that quest. And it says something more about us, right? It's reflective, perhaps, than what ever we see. I will mention one thing. There's a whole side of this that I didn't bring up tonight, but that I do want to explore with someone from either the company or sort of a serial user of it. And I just started to stumble down this rabbit hole of something called the Owls of Eternity test. It's a deep part of this subculture, which are these videos and experiments that people are using with the app. They essentially have developed a test to determine if you have quantum jumped or not during the use of this app. So now we're starting to look at a situation where, if not on face value, crazy things are happening and we're seeing some weird stuff every once in a while. Groups of individuals with focused intent are believing that some sort of divination is occurring through this app and that they are essentially quantum jumping. They're entering a different reality space. So Tim, I'm going to, you muted. I got to give you permission. I don't know if I like this. It's very like controlling.
Okay. So if this is making me think of, anybody here ever work with angel cards or, you know, at any moment has said, you know, I'm going to turn to a page in a book and get an answer or something like that, you know? So the reason why that actually works is because we don't get to see, we're not awake to all of the dimensionality that we're living in, right? Like I said, when I work the tree, I'm working with 10 dimensions. That doesn't mean that like I'm awake to them all the time, but I know how to be with it in a way that it reveals more dimensionality with whatever I'm working with. So I say that because there's a healing that we do that's called sinking into the text. And what we do for that is we have a certain intention. You know, someone who write down a particular intention that they want to heal or conflict they have, just something they want to learn or get more information about. And then I'll open up a non-dual book, whether that's the Torah or some other sacred text, or maybe even just a really good book by somebody who knows how to write well. And I'll open it up and I'll point to the passage. And then we'll unpack that passage. And inevitably, it has something to share, some way to inform our lives in some way. So Amy, I love what you said about how it's sort of, I don't remember the exact words, but it's sort of a way to kind of like shake things up or get you out of your normal routine, your normal patterns, right? Because ultimately with focused intention, and then we work with the app, it's no different than sinking into the text or looking at an angel card or working with the higher dimensions in this way, even though we don't get to see it, we just have to trust and go on faith. It's so important because we have to have a willingness to be transformed by whatever is showing up. So one of the most important healings that I had with my Dubai class was when I opened up the text and I pointed to a page that had no writing on it. And that was like the first time that had ever happened before. And I panicked. I didn't know what to do. But by being with it in the way that it's just said, okay, this is valuable. I'm here. So I'm trusting that my focused intention brought me here. The universe is designed to heal. So there's something about this mystery that I may not know yet, but I'm willing to meet it as I am. And in doing that, it unfolded into this miraculous thing. It doesn't always be miraculous, but this time it was. That's why I remember it. So I guess what I'm trying to instill here is the fact that as we work with this tool, right, this tool is as awake as we are, I believe. And this tool, I believe, will change as we change with it. Hmm. And I think where it takes us is it might always be the right thing, but it depends on how we meet it and how our relationship to it is. You know, do you kind of get a sense of what I'm getting at here? Yeah. Because this is what I'm starting to think about, deepening our relationship to this app and letting it evolve with us and through us.
Well, there's this notion that there will be some co-creation that occurs through this process.
Yeah, there cannot be. It's not just a quantum jumping portal, you know, it's you meeting this other thing and then something happening. And so it's going to be different every single time based on who you are and where the app is in terms of its unfoldment and its consciousness. Because if we don't think that programming and computer code and robots where they are aren't awakening in their own way, we're missing the boat.
Wow.
So we have to start thinking this way.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more eerie, but at the same time, it makes it alive and dynamic, which is what it is.
Right. Yeah. How interesting. Haley, were you going to say something?
One thing that I really like about Randonautica is like the idea that when it's calculating where to send you and it says, think of your intent, and the idea that my thoughts are going to affect like the actual sort of calculations and code of an app. And I just think that's really interesting and something I've never really seen before. And yes. While I was disappointed based on what my intention was going to that spot, it's a street I've walked down a million times before, but I stopped and I looked at that particular apartment and I thought, oh my God, what is in there? What can't I see? And it was a great feeling, even if it was like, you know, even a couple blocks away. And now every time I walk past there, I'm going to think, what's in there? And at least it's making me have a different experience, like you said, Amy, every time I do. And it's changed my life in some small way.
Yeah, as if it's helping mythologize our daily lives mm-hmm. in some way, which is really interesting and profound, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think I probably need to try it before the next show on my own and see what happens with that and then report back. Not to say that any of you need to do that yourselves, but if you do have further experiences, I think this is a really prescient, interesting form of divination is what my belief is. And I think what it represents and what it shows us is potentially a link to our greatest idea of what consciousness is, and especially our shared consciousness. It's an example of what can be, and the potentiality of something like this, I don't know, approaching a younger generation as well, and allowing them to sort of leave reality at face value, leaving it, setting aside, and accepting, or at least considering, that there's something much greater, which I think is pretty profound. It's sort of, you know, it's sort of like the Ouija board. You know, if you talk to a lot of folks that are interested in the history of planchettes and the you know, that particular game version of it, it was a real access point to an entire generation to divination, and that something else was going on. That when, you know, sort of these modes of spirit communication or tapping into some other greater world go through these cycles of these avatars or devices, that every generation has something that connects them to this idea. And I think this might be that great next example of what this could be.
Can I add one more thing to what you just said?
Sparked,
because I love the Ouija board analogy. And I'm holding that, and then I'm also holding how I'm just started thinking about unanswered prayers in the world. Like, how many times have we asked for something and not gotten it?
Mm.
Right? Happens all the time, probably, right? Happens to me. So when I think about unanswered prayers, I think about the small ego or the small will, like I was saying before, and then this other co-creative aspect of life, and perhaps even our unconscious, which may be asking for something in a stronger way than our conscious mind does, right? Conscious mind wants Ferrari, so I get the girl. Unconscious mind, you know, really wants you to actually heal and answer your soul's calling. So when you ask for a particular prayer, I'd like a Ferrari, and you get something else, you know, you might think, oh, this shit doesn't work. Right. But really what you're not awake to, you're not listening to some deeper calling or something that's like a little bit more intimate. And I'm wondering about that relationship to this app as well, in terms of what we're meeting and how, when we show up at whatever that destination is, to have just a different relationship to it that says, I have no idea what this is.
Yeah.
Even when you think you know exactly what it is, right? It says danger and here, right? It's like, oh, okay, this is so obvious, but what else is going on? Just to leave a little bit of space for that, for the soul to have a relationship to this quantum thing.
You know, Ryan reminds me, and I'll share this, when Tim and I first became friends, even though I wouldn't classify myself as a mystic or a non-dualist, even though I can really dig, I would often have these synchronistic experiences or paranormal awakenings that would happen to me along my adventures. And I would turn to Tim and I go, hey, what do you think that means? Like, what do, like, shamanically, what do you think that means? And he goes, I don't know. Maybe it means nothing. Or maybe it means something. I don't know. Just like, kind of listen, like, see what happens from here. And you would tell me that often. And it feels like we're setting ourselves in this position where listening becomes so much more profound and important, paying attention to those things around us, paying attention and taking in and integrating the strange block that's like two doors over that you've never even paid attention to, but now has something deeply moving to you. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how us as a culture sort of consume this. I think the timing is really interesting, considering how much strife there is right now, how much turmoil, how much pain is being expressed, you know, and us trying to find an outlet for it, that we're now accepting into our sort of lexicon of belief systems and adventures, this notion that there is something else, there is something more than this right here. I can discover it very easily next door. So I think that's really interesting. Thank you for listening to this edition of Night Drift, presented by Euphemet. Thank you to our guest, Tim Rothschild. For more of his work, find links in the show notes, and thank you as well to our sponsors, Spotify and Anchor. To be a part of our next live Zoom interview, join us on Patreon. It's $5 per month and includes access to Euphemet, the original series, and much more. For everything Euphemet, including how you can subscribe to the show, our short film series with Carl Pfeiffer of Hell Yeah, merch, and links to our social media, visit euphemet.com. Thank you for listening. This is Jim Perry, and until next time, keep looking up.
Follow Euphemet on Spotify and subscribe on iTunes to receive new episodes of Night Drift automatically and gain access to all of our past episodes.